This is I Ask, They Answer on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Funny Uncle now pokes ahead in front. Vietnam Victory is looking for a wide run past the quarter pole. It is Funny Uncle trying to stave them off. Vietnam Victory, the outside, a big run coming from Release McCracken. Funny Uncle is confronted by Vietnam Victory and Release McCracken in upper stretch. Farther back, Send the Boss into the final 100 yards. Release McCracken has been unleashed and is pulling clear with each and every stride. Release McCracken, three stakes on the day for Brett Calhoun. Three for Ernesto Valdez Jimenez. Release McCracken wins. Send the Boss, then Funny Uncle, and Vietnam Victory.
Well, it's not every week that we get to start this segment, or any segment, with the call of the Texas Thoroughbred Association Derby. But that was the race you just heard. Release McCracken etching his name in the Texas Racing Media Guides with that victory last year. Nick Tamaro had the call for us. That race is renewed later this afternoon. And now there is even talk of a proposed third racetrack in the Lone Star State. Dale and Tim will share their thoughts on that development. Plus, with all the talk of medication reform and safety issues, has racing taken its eye off the ball when it comes to one of its most critical pieces? And we'll talk about the things we love about racehorses and horse racing. All of that and so much more straight ahead on this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf rider Tim Wilkin, and all presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program and the College of Business. And it all starts just 30 seconds from right now.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 35 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
All right, guys, some different topics on this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. I'm excited to get your thoughts on a few of these. And we're going to start with Indianapolis-based horse player Mike Gillum, who put in a Zenyatta-like stretch run to win the National Handicapping Championship Tournament in Las Vegas last Sunday. Gillum started the day, get this, in 64th place, but he ended the day with the $800,000 grand prize. Incredible stuff. That got me to thinking, without people betting on races, let's face it, guys, we don't have a sport. So with all the talk about safety protocols and medication testings, Tim, I'll come to you first. Is racing doing enough to support its horse players?
Well, first, congratulations to Mike on that astounding victory in Vegas. The horse players are the heartbeat of the sport. As you said, without them, there is no sport. What can be done to protect or support them? I don't know if there's a lot. It seems to me that the guy that goes to the track every day, you know, sort of gets squeezed out when the big days come. They have the big race at Turfway today, the Jeff Ruby, and they have a VIP room for $400. That kind of squeezes out, I think, a lot of players that might normally be in that room on a regular day. I think more should be done to make the guy that's there all the time more comfortable and more welcome in a way. You know, that's there's other things that. Louisiana Derby. It's a $10 general admission, $25 for the clubhouse for their big day. There's lots been talked about with fixed odds. I think more horse players would welcome to have fixed odds. They only have it at Monmouth. You know, you bet a horse at 4-1 and he ends up going off at 8-5, and you know, if you think you've got a diamond in the rough, and all of a sudden you don't. I think that's something that should be looked at more. But, you look at the Belmont at Saratoga. That thing sold out, and this is a unique event, granted. but that sold out in a day. You know, general admission, you're $50. Four-day festival pass is $90. That's doable when you compare it to, you know, some of the other prices. I mean, you go to the you want to go to Yankee Stadium for opening day, you're paying $115 cheapest to get in. You want to go to the Super Bowl, you're paying $6,000. There's always going to be money to be paid to get into an event. But the thing is, with horse racing, here's the rub: you're getting the people that are coming to your venue, but that you want them to bet money out of their pockets when they get there. So I think there's got to be more done to make it more comfortable for the horse player.
Yeah, there's some things could probably be better, but I think the horse player right now is in a better position than they've ever been. I know based on Churchill Downs, where I spend most of my time, is they have their goal room, they have representatives that follow the players, they get access to even the Kentucky Derby if they're playing through Twin Spires or in the goal room on their cards. Not to mention how much easier it is to gamble. All the race forms are online. You're getting access a week ahead of time. And most of these racetracks nowadays, you get replays, free replays. You can bet from your telephone from anywhere. You get to watch the works on XBTV for the Stronach racetracks. Churchill Downs starting to put works up. You cannot do it. You can't do enough for a horse player, but I think a lot of things are positive, too, for today's world of being a horse player. It's a lot easier to do than it used to be. You know, you used to just have to get the form and go to the track and bet. Now, if you're a true player, you can be driving down the road betting on horses and watching on your iPad. And there's a lot of information out there for the players, and I think the players have gotten a lot better.
Yeah, I hope that if you're watching the races on your iPad, you're sitting in the passenger seat and not the driver's seat. But, yes, I get your point, Dale,
sure, that
you can do it from anywhere now, and that is certainly a convenience. Guys, how about what's often talked about by horse players when there's an incident at a racetrack, an inquiry, a disqualification, and we hear the word transparency thrown around a lot, and inconsistency too, because the rules and the regulations and the enforcement seem to be different from track to track. And I know for a lot of horse players, that can be very frustrating. Is there anything that can be done to alleviate those problems?
Well, that's been a problem since the beginning of racing, and different rules and different jurisdictions and different interpretations of the rules. Yeah, that should all be under one umbrella and should be the same all over the country and everywhere. But anytime you put something in human hands, mistakes will be made.
Timmy, are takeouts too high? That's another part of it.
But I was just going to say that, you know, when you're talking about human error and stuff, look what happened to Tampa Bay Derby Day when they had the tote issue. And, you know, the Tampa Bay Derby, the biggest race of that meet, was you couldn't get paid. That's obviously it was something that was out of everybody's hands, but it's very frustrating for a player, but there's no question about that. And as far as takeout, everyone would like to see a lower, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody would. But, I mean, understand that's never going to happen. That's never going to be the case. But, I don't know. I think, as Dale points out, it is very convenient now for horse players to play the races. I know, you know, I don't even have to go to the racetrack to make a bet. Certainly that's changed a lot over the past several years. But just the fact that, you know, there are inconveniences involved, and I guess it's going to be like that with any sport. But, boy, I would just like to see that horse player, Timmy, who shows up every single day, as you pointed out, and comes to the races every day or bets your product every day, maybe just get a little thank you every once in a while, a little kickback, a little incentive. You know, casinos will often send out coupons for a free play or for a free night at their hotel or whatever the case might be. I think little things like that would go a long way.
At least give them a bowl of soup. Give them something.
Something. Yeah.
You got to remember, nothing's free. Casino gives you something. It's for a reason.
Well, they want you back there.
They're going to get a whole lot more back in return.
No question. But, you know, it would make people feel a little bit more cozy and welcome and if they're and wanted. The tracks definitely want them because they want their money. They don't want the guy. They want the money.
Yeah, and Dale, to your point, I think racing would benefit greatly from doing those types of promotions because they're going to get back far more than what they're giving out if they give somebody a voucher or they give somebody a, you know, a free meal at the racetrack. that person is going to come out. They're going to bring friends. They're going to bet the races. They're going to benefit tenfold from what they were able to give them. And that person is going to feel very good. That horse player is going to feel very good about that thank you gift that they received from the racetrack. Those kinds of things to me can be done
easily. For the daily players, there's stuff like that already. Like I said, Churchill has the go room. You go every day and bet horses. You get to go to the special section in the go room. They give you free food and drinks to go along with it. Gulfstream Park has a, for the regular player, there's two or three rows that are only for the regular players, and they have a host right there that's in the off-track betting facility. For the big players, they got a whole suite upstairs with free food and drinks that if you're playing at a high level where you get to go. So there is more of that than people think about or talk about.
But what about the guys that go every day and they're not they don't bet, they don't have the deep pockets, but they bet every day.
There are levels for those. I mean, you got to get to a certain point, but it's not that the levels aren't unrealistic for these two tracks. And I don't know about the New York tracks. I haven't spent enough time up there with the gamblers to know what they did. But I can tell you that Gulfstream Park and Churchill Downs tries to look after their daily players.
All right, well, let's move on to our next topic then, and this is something we could probably spend the next half hour talking about and debating and going back and forth because there's a lot of layers to that particular horse player topic. But I want to move on and say hello to our good friend Nick Zito and let Dale and Tim tell me if the following statements are right or wrong.
Yeah, right or wrong. Am I right? What do you think? Right or wrong?
Okay, there were a couple of stories this week, guys, that were featured on the Thoroughbred Racing commentary, and the first outlined plans for a proposed new racetrack in Texas, which would be just outside of Austin. And if all goes according to plan, the new track could be open as soon as 2030, joining Lone Star Park and Sam Houston, with several tracks closing in recent years and declining foal numbers and stringent HISA regulations. My question to you is it right or wrong to be talking about adding more racing venues?
What do you think? Right or wrong?
Dale, what do you think? Is it right or wrong?
Hey, if we can get more venues out there, let's get them. I don't have a problem with it. I think it'd be a good move. And anybody's going to put up the money it costs to operate and build a racetrack has run the numbers and knows that Austin would be a good place to have one. It's, more expansion, the better. We need a few places. We've had enough of them closed lately.
I'm going to go wrong on this one because it's racing in Texas is in trouble as it is with the dispute between the Texas Racing Commission and HISA over who should regulate the tracks, the state's racetracks. You know, there's no signal being sent out anymore, and it's mind-boggling at what has happened. You know, the handle down there. I mean, for an example, at the Houston Racing Festival in 2022, nearly $6 million bet on that big day. This year, it was a shade under $500,000. You know, I think that it's a noble gesture that someone wants to build a racetrack, and Austin has a lot of people around it. But with a 2030 start date plan, I would think that maybe this dispute will be hopefully resolved. I would think if it's not resolved by 2030, there won't be any racing in Texas. But we haven't had any. I could be wrong on this, but I think the last racetrack that came into existence was Lone Star in 1997. I don't think there's been one since. And you know, we've seen places like Hollywood Park and Arlington and Hialeah and Suffolk, Atlantic City, all go by the wayside. It's sad when you see racetracks go, and especially some of those iconic ones. I mean, it's a noble thing again, but I don't know if it would work under the current structure of racing in Texas. I hope it would, but I'd have my doubts.
Yeah, one of the sickening things when it comes to a racetrack closing was the sale of Arlington Park to the Chicago Bears. The facility was torn down, and now the Bears are pivoting and not even using that land for a new stadium as it was originally proposed. So that's one of the things, guys, that when you look at racetracks that have closed, really does tear at your heart, and it makes you sick. And I think seeing a new racetrack in Texas would be very positive, especially, Timmy, as you pointed out, 2030. All of that infighting and the legislative process that has to take place in order to get past some of the disputes that they're having now in Texas should be in the rearview mirror. And as you said, it has to be, or Texas could be in big, big trouble by that point. Also on Thoroughbred Racing Commentary, and this kind of ties into the first topic we talked about, John Lees interviewed trainer Ken McPeak, and he asked if he could change one thing in racing, what would it be? And McPeak's reply was he would make it easier for people to watch racing, saying that the industry needs to focus on making the media rights and access to live races and replays simpler. Holding them close to the vest is keeping the sport from growing. Tim, is Ken right or wrong?
What do you think? Right or wrong?
Well, I agree with Kenny 100% on that. But, you know, it's and he has that Horse Racing Now app that he invented that's designed to get the fans closer to the sport, and he's done a great job with that. But, you know, it's like anything else. It's you want to watch something, you're going to have to pay. I mean, there's not much free stuff in this world. You know, you want to watch an NFL team on the NFL Network, you're paying for that. You want to watch the Yankees on the YES Network, you got to have the internet to have that. You got to pay for that. But, you know, you for horse racing, you have to have a platform where you can go to watch things. And, you know, I think that it would bring more people into the game and maybe keep them into the game. Yeah, I agree 100% with Kenny.
Well, the more access, the better. That's kind of a setup question for Kenny, because he wants to sell the replays and everything on Horse Racing Now. But if you look at, realistically, the only thing racetracks have are their content. That's where they make their money. And again, I say nothing's free. So everybody has to pay.
Yeah, well, the more exposure that the sport can get, that certainly doesn't hurt. I don't know how many more racing fans you create by putting horse racing out there on a bigger platform, but it certainly helps those of us who are already fans being able to have easy access to the sport. So that is Nick Zito. That is Right or Wrong. That segment comes back next week on I Ask the Answer, as it does every single week. But, guys, we have two more topics to get to before you get to make your final point of the week, and both of these are submitted via email from our listeners. And we encourage listeners every single week to submit their questions to Mike at horseracingradio.net or post them on our social media pages, and we will include them on the show. So they actually get to ask questions of you guys, and I know how much you enjoy it. So here is one from Andre, who is a small percentage owner in a few horses. He emailed me with his ideas to help grow the national foal crop this past week, and he also had a few questions, one which I thought was kind of a cool fit for this week's show. He's curious about the estimated cost of raising a homebred. So beyond the stud fees, what medical and vet care is provided for the mare and for the foal, nutrition considerations during gestation and after the foal is delivered, and then breaking and training costs, farrier costs, anything that's related to getting a homebred to the racetrack. Dale, you want to take this one first?
No, I'd say you have 50,000 of them as a minimum when you get them to the racetrack. It's an expensive thing to do, and you know, that has a little bit to do with the diminishing foal crop. But if you look, I've always said it's a secular thing. When the stud fees come down and the sales go back up, the foal crops get bigger. The way the purses are today, though, you can afford to put your 50,000 in the homebred and get them to the race. If they can run a little bit, they can make that money back. But it's no cheap process, no matter how you do it. Not if you're going to do it right.
And Andre's correct. I mean, those are all things that are involved in getting your horse to the track. All of those different costs that the owner is responsible for after breeding a homebred.
Even if you own your own farm, I mean, it's expensive to operate a farm. It's just an expensive endeavor to get a horse to the races.
Well, seeing as I am just a
humble hack at this game. I have no idea about the costs of any of this. So I'm going to defer to Mr. Romans, who is an expert, because he does it. Because I would just be whistling in the wind if I were to come up to try to make any sense out of this question. So I'm deferring to Dale.
Dale, the 50K you just mentioned, that doesn't include any setbacks, right? I mean, you're just talking about everything going flawlessly with that foal from the time they're born all the way till the time they get to the racetrack.
That's a figure off the top of my head, but it's got to be pretty close. It may even be a little bit more. I mean, yeah, it's expensive. You're right, without setbacks. If somebody just handed you a foal right out of a mare and said, get it to the races, you're going to have $50,000 in that foal before you get there easy.
Andre, we appreciate the question. That's really good, and thanks for your ideas on helping to grow the sport. I'll respond to you there, too. Okay, the next question is from Rick, and this one also comes via email. And he's asking if Dale and Tim, if you guys could please talk a little bit about why and what you really love about racehorses and about this game. Dale, what do you love so much?
I like the animal. I mean, that's the core of the whole thing. I've always liked the animal since the day I was born. I've been going into a barn and around the horses. And at a higher level, it's the opportunity to be around greatness every day. And there's something great, whether it's a great jockey, a great horse, just a great exercise boy or groom. I'm around greatness every day, and I love that. And I love the animal, just the animal. They're such interesting animals, and people don't get to know them well enough. But they're, you can't make them a pet, but they interact with you, and they just make your life better when you're around those animals.
I agree with you 100% on that. I mean, I've been out to the back stretches enough in my life. And these animals, as you said, they're such curious creatures. I mean, and they all have personalities. Some really good, some are mean. But that's just the way that people are like that, too. But I remember going out to Keith DeSalmo's barn when he was up in Saratoga with Exaggerator, the Preakness winner of a couple years back. And I always had Peppermints with me. And it got to the point where Exaggerator got mad if I didn't show up for a day. Because his people at the barn were saying, boy, you weren't here yesterday. And, boy, was he ticked off because he was expecting his Peppermints at 10 o'clock. And I always got a kick out of that. And when I would come up there, he'd paw and he'd be slamming his head around. And, you know, he was a character. And another one that was that I got a kick out of, Swiss Skydiver, the filly that won the Preakness for Kenny McPeak a few years in the COVID year. Now, she had a personality, and I think she really liked me. I mean, I'm just going to say that right out loud, because I would go over there, and of course I had mints for her, but she also was a very playful filly. And I remember being over there one morning talking to a couple people outside her barn, and I had my back to Swiss Skydiver. I had a hoodie on, and after about 2 or 3 minutes with my back to her, she leaned out of the stall and grabbed the hood and snapped it back, like to pull me towards her. It was like, hey, you're here to see me, kind of thing. And you know, she was a very, very interesting horse, and what a personality she had. And another filly that Kenny had was Crazy Beautiful, was the same thing. You know, just playful. And they have, they know that people are there. It helps if you have something to feed them, but they really do. They're interested in the people that are around their stalls. And, you know, I just love being out there in the mornings. It's my favorite part of being involved with this sport. And the fact that, you know, I've covered so long, I get some good access. And, you know, it's just, you can't say enough about these thoroughbreds. And, you know, I've just enjoyed them immensely.
Tim, are we sure Swiss Skydiver wasn't trying to strangle you as opposed to pull you closer to her?
No. She knew exactly what she was doing. I mean, she snapped me back. I mean, she wasn't trying to hurt me, but she was telling me, hey, I'm here. Don't talk to those stupid people out there. You're here to see me.
Yeah. I'm with you on this one, Timmy. I think being around the horses, seeing their different personalities, is one thing that I love so much about it. And like you, I come at it from the media side of things. Not like Dale. I'm not in the barn every day. I'm not around the horses every single day. But the times that you're able to be around them, watching their personalities and seeing how much different they are, just like people, is really one of the cool things for me about this game and about the horses.
And they're so smart. They remember who. I mean, she remembered me every day. I mean, and she'd snicker and whinny, and you know, Exaggerator was the same way, and so was Crazy Beautiful. And there's tons more that I could mention, but those are just three off the top of my head. And I've had interactions with horses at Dale's barn too. They're just really cool creatures.
Dale, who's the horse you've trained with the biggest personality?
I would say Patio Prado had the biggest personality. He would go out on the racetrack and start yinnying and talking and to other horses. And if somebody walked in the barn, he wanted you to come pet him, he'd start yelling. And he was just a friendly, funny horse. And he backed it up on the racetrack.
Wasn't Shackleford the same way in a way, too?
Shackleford had a big personality, but his was a little bit different. He was a little bit of a bully. But it seemed like if a kid came around or something, he would be right. Or a camera. I swore he knew cameras were out there and would go pose. But he could be a little bit rough. But one of the great days, they both had strong personalities, was when we won the Dixie and the Preakness on the same day. And Pimlico throws his big party afterwards. And we got to drinking, and everybody's trying to come pet Shackleford. And Patty was over yelling for him to come pet him. They were petting on him. And Shackleford, it was like he knew these were novice people. He didn't try. I told him, go pet all you want, but if you get bit, it's not my fault. And he didn't bite anybody. He knew he had just won the Preakness. He knew he was the celebrity, and it was a fun night.
You know, it's amazing, Dale, when you say that. I mean, people say, what are you talking about? They have a personality. But people that haven't been around, they don't know. They do have. And these horses, they do know. If they're good.
They know, and each personality is different, and that's part of training horses is figuring out the personality of your horse and what they like or don't like. I mean, I had a filly, Tappet's Fly. She didn't want anybody around her. Just leave her alone. Our groom told him, go in there, brush her, put her bandage on, and get out. Leave her alone. She did not want to be bothered with people. And then I had a horse, C.S. Silk. She was a grade one winner. And when someone walked in the barn, she'd stick her neck out and start kind of calling for them to come down there and pet on her. They all have different personalities, and you just got to learn how to deal with them.
Wow. Rick, Andre, really appreciate those questions. Once again, if you have a question or a topic you want Dale and Tim to discuss or debate here on I Ask, They Answer, email that topic to me. We'll get it worked into the show. That's mike@horseracingradio.net. And you can drop it on our social media pages at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. All right, guys, time now for each of you to make your final point of the week. Tim, as is customary here on the program, we will begin with you, my friend.
Well, we're in the home stretch of the Kentucky Derby prep season. Today we have the Louisiana Derby and the Jeff Ruby, and this is the start of the 100-point races. So you're going to start seeing some of the cream rising to the top. And I'm in the Louisiana Derby, I'm really kind of looking forward to the Steve Matthews pair that are in that track. Phantom, who was second in the Risen Star behind Sierra Leone, who's considered one of the top, if not the top, prospects for the Derby, got beat half a length. And the other horse, Hall of Fame, who was seventh, a disappointing seventh in that race. I'm going to see if he can rebound. So the 100-point races are here, and, you know, full steam to Kentucky now, right?
Yeah, Timmy, we had similar points. I was thinking winter racing is winding down. We got into Churchill Downs this week. Of course, we start training this week at Churchill Downs, and we're getting back to the meat and potato, my favorite time of year, spring in Kentucky.
Are you back in Kentucky?
Not yet. I go back up next week, right after Florida Derby, but Churchill Downs opened its backside. That's always a good thing.
So you have a few more beach days.
A few more beach days and a couple rounds of golf and head back home.
There you go.
It'll be golf weather when you get back there too, Dale. So we'll look forward to seeing you back in the bluegrass, my friend. Guys, appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. Good luck at the races, and we'll do it all over again next week.
next week.
Sounds good.
All right, that is I Ask, They Answer. It's presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program in the College of Business. I am back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, where racing comes to talk.